Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I'm Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Wednesday, May 6th, 2026, which means we are covering the biggest stories from yesterday, May 5th. And wow, episode 387, Sarah, we have a packed show today.
We really do. We are talking about Google Chrome silently dropping a massive AI model on your hard drive, some spicy open source drama involving Bun porting from Zig to Rust, an entire country's top-level domain going offline thanks to DNSSEC, a developer blaming AI for deleting their production database, and finally, some new tech behind Google's Gemma 4 model.
Let us jump right into that first one. Google Chrome silently installs a 4GB AI model on your device without consent. This post by privacy advocate Alexander Hanf got over 1,300 points yesterday.
Right, so Hanf discovered that Chrome is pushing a 4GB file called weights.bin to users' machines. It's the Gemini Nano model, used for on-device AI features like Help Me Write, and it's happening without any explicit opt-in from the user.
The crazy part is the persistence. If you find the file and delete it, Chrome just re-downloads it. Hanf even set up a clean automated macOS profile that never actually clicked on any AI features, and boom, 4 gigs downloaded anyway. He brings up a really interesting angle too, the environmental cost. Pushing 4 gigabytes to a billion devices has a massive carbon footprint. We're talking thousands of tons of CO2 emissions just for one forced update.
The Hacker News comments on this were fascinating because they really highlighted the divide in how we view software ownership today. A user named Crazy Gringo argued that framing this as a consent issue is deeply misguided. They compared it to Microsoft Word installing an English spellcheck dictionary. You consented to the software and its auto updates, so that covers new features.
But then you had users like GHCW firing back, pointing out that a dictionary is maybe 100 kilobytes. 4 gigabytes is a totally different scale. It feels like the modern version of those old browser toolbars we used to accidentally install, except now it's vertically integrated by the browser vendor.
Exactly. And XP84 made a great point that this is just the reality of modern software. We download gigabytes of ad tech and tracking code without thinking about it. Apple downloads 4 gigabytes of audio samples if you install GarageBand. The only consent we get anymore is that all-or-nothing end-user license agreement.
It really comes down to user agency. If you do not want a large language model running locally on your machine, you basically have to dive into hidden Chrome flags or just uninstall the browser entirely. It is a tough pill to swallow for power users who want control over their disk space and background processes.
Speaking of power users getting fired up, our next story is a GitHub commit titled Zig to Rust Porting Guide, which hit 700 points. It is from the Oven team, the creators of the Bun JavaScript runtime.
Oh man, the drama on this one was palpable. For context, Bun is famously written in Zig. It is a huge point of pride for the project and a big reason for its incredible performance. So when a branch appeared showing an AI-assisted port from Zig to Rust using Claude, the community lost its collective mind.
Over 300 comments of pure panic and debate. But the funniest part is that Jared Sumner, the creator of Bun, had to jump into the Hacker News thread to calm everyone down. He explicitly said, "This whole thread is an overreaction. We have not committed to rewriting. It is just an experiment to see what a working Rust version would look like, how it performs, and if it's maintainable."
I love that he had to do damage control because people were reading so much into a branch named Claude Phase A port. The Hacker News thread devolved into a debate about whether you should label your branches as experimental if you work in public. A user named Skywhopper pointed out that when you work on a high-profile project, your public branches communicate intent, so you have to be careful.
But on the flip side, other commenters were defending the right to just experiment. It's open source. Developers should be allowed to try things out without the community treating every commit like a binding contract. And the fact that they are using an AI agent to do a massive crate-by-crate translation of the codebase is just a really cool technical experiment in itself.
Totally. It reminds me of Cloudflare porting Next.js a couple of months ago using AI. We are entering this era where translating a massive codebase from one language to another is no longer a multi-year, millions of dollars endeavor. You can spin it up as a weekend experiment just to see if the vibes are right.
Well, speaking of things going wrong in public, let us talk about the internet in Germany. A post titled .detld offline due to DNSSEC hit 570 points yesterday.
Yes, if you were trying to reach any .de website, like amazon.de, you might have hit a wall. Validating resolvers were throwing server fail errors. It turns out the German registry, DNIC, published a malformed signature during a routine key rollover.
It is the classic tech joke. It is always DNS. But in this case, it was DNSSEC, which is the security extension for DNS. A user named Christoph B. broke it down perfectly in the comments. Basically, they published a signature that did not validate against the zone signing key, so every secure resolver on the internet refused to answer queries for .de domains.
The Hacker News thread immediately turned into a debate about the value and risks of DNSSEC. A user named QAZWSXEDCHAC pointed out how wild it is that a single configuration mistake can wipe out the external reachability of a major global economy. The internet is supposed to route around damage, but fail-close security protocols like DNSSEC create these massive single points of failure.
It is a trade-off, right? You want the security of knowing your DNS responses are not being spoofed, but the operational complexity of DNSSEC is notoriously high. One commenter mentioned they have been in IT for 30 years and still avoid DNSSEC because the penalty for a screw-up is a total outage. They compared it to Let's Encrypt, noting that if Let's Encrypt goes down, you have days or weeks before certificates expire and things break. If DNSSEC breaks, you are offline instantly.
Exactly. Though some folks defended it, saying that if you automate it properly with modern tools, it's actually quite stable. But man, when it fails at the top-level domain tier, it is a bad day for a lot of network admins.
Moving from network outages to database disasters, our next story is a blog post by Ibrahim Diallo titled, AI Didn't Delete Your Database, You Did. This got just over 500 points.
This is a response to a viral tweet from last week where a developer claimed that an AI coding agent, specifically Cursor using Claude, deleted his company's production database. The developer was trying to interrogate the AI, asking it why it did that when it was told not to.
Abraham's blog post takes a very pragmatic stance. He asks the obvious question, why do you have an API endpoint that deletes your entire production database exposed in the first place? He compares it to putting a self-destruct button on your car's dashboard. You cannot be mad at a toddler for pressing a big red button, and you cannot interrogate the toddler about their reasoning.
The Hacker News comments were incredibly thoughtful on this one. A user named Peroni Aya brought up a fascinating quote from the legendary computer scientist Gerald Sussman. Sussman once said he wants software that is accountable, software that can explain its symbolic reasoning and tell you exactly why it did what it did.
Right, and LLMs are the exact opposite of that. They are non-deterministic text generators. A user named Bad Bad Jellybean made a great analogy. They said they have accidentally wiped the wrong disk using a partitioning tool in the past. The tool was not to blame, the user was. LLMs are just tools. They are powerful, like a bandsaw, but they do not have safety guards built in for your specific business logic.
That is exactly it. Another commenter pointed out that AI agents are basically text-in, text-out machines. If you wire that machine up to have agency over your production database, you are bypassing all sensible safeguards. It is a huge wake-up call for this new era of vibe coding. You cannot just let an AI architect, write, and deploy your code without human accountability. If something breaks, it is on the human who gave the AI the keys to the kingdom.
Our final story today is a bit of AI news from Google. A post on the Google blog titled Accelerating Gemma 4, Faster Inference with Multi-Token Prediction Drafters pulled in almost 500 points.
So Gemma 4 is Google's latest open weights model. The blog post gets into the weeds of how they're using multi-token prediction to speed up inference, basically predicting multiple future words at once rather than one by one. But the Hacker News discussion actually pivoted to a really interesting conversation about using Google's models in the real world right now.
Yeah, a user named Warmwash pointed out something I hadn't considered. They said Gemma and Gemini use enormously fewer tokens per output than other models while still staying competitive on benchmarks. They gave an example where a competitor model might score slightly better, but takes 22 minutes to run a complex task, whereas Gemma might get a tiny detail wrong, but finishes in 4 minutes.
The discussion heavily featured people sharing their experiences with the Gemini command line interface and the anti-gravity workspace. It seems like Google has quietly fixed a lot of the looping issues that plagued earlier versions. A user named Toraway mentioned that the CLI has crushed everything they threw at it lately, especially when using the Pro model instead of the default Flash model.
That was a huge theme in the comments. The Flash model is incredibly fast, but can act like a drunk junior programmer on complex code bases. If you manually force it to use the Pro model, the results are fantastic.
Though there is some grumbling about the pricing and usage limits. People were noting that Google's basic plans push you toward Flash, and if you want the really good Pro stuff for heavy coding, you hit rate limits pretty fast unless you are paying for the higher tiers. Still, it is fascinating to see how the community is mixing and matching models, like using Claude for planning and Gemini Pro for the heavy lifting, just to manage their token budgets.
It really is a wild time to be a developer. Between AI writing code, AI deleting databases, and AI downloading itself onto our laptops, there is never a dull moment.
That is for sure. And that wraps up our show for today. Thank you so much for hanging out with us and diving into these stories.
If you want to read any of the articles or join the discussions, you can find all the links on Hacker News. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the top stories. Have a great day, everyone.
See you tomorrow.